Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
It's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans and Joe, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts.
What is Sean doing that he can't be here on the show this week?
Sean may or may not be in New Jersey prepping Kevin Lee for his big debut in the UFC.
So Sean's big timing us now.
Sean is
can't show up for the show.
Everybody at Triumph MMA is now big timing us. They all feel that they're either Pat Barry or Greg Jackson, or they're all big timing us now.
Just because they had that bit on Fox 17.
Just
in West
because
Michigan.
They were on Fox 17 and they're ready for their UFC debut. All of that is happening.
That's very cool, though, that he's there right now with Kevin Lee.
Yes, and that fight will be the kickoff on Saturday night, assuming they don't move the Super Bowl. If between the time you listen to this podcast and Saturday, some sort of giant polar vortex, this would be 3 or 4, rolls through, they might move the Super Bowl from Sunday to Saturday. If they do that, they will move UFC 169 from Saturday to Sunday.
Dana said that would be his effing luck.
That is what he said, yes.
And hell, he would move it to Monday if he needed to at some point. So how cool would that be, a Monday night UFC that starts at 10?
I saw the same thing, and I got really excited. I'm like, well, that'd be kind of a fun thing to do on a Monday night.
Yeah, sure.
After the Super Bowl.
Sure, the buy rates would be great. I'm sure they'd be awesome.
It'd be the three of us and Dana White's children. And that would
you
be...
too. You too. I'm got to go to bed. I got to work in the morning.
Whatever. So
those of us that are employed gainfully in the mornings.
At this point, we're all gainfully employed. We just don't show up at 4 in the morning.
Like I do.
We all have jobs. Let's make that very clear. Like, what? It's not Joe and I in the street
until
once a week we get to talk about men punching each other. That's not what we do for a living.
Again, put the caveat in, when you're listening to the podcast, that may change.
Yes. What, our jobs or the...
Yeah, we're in broadcasting. Okay.
Well,
that's what happens.
Fair enough. Okay, so yes, by the time you listen to this, that might have changed. But for right now, everything is going to be status quo. UFC 169 will take place on Saturday night. The Super Bowl, I can say the Super Bowl, right?
You can say the Super Bowl card. You just can't try to make money with Super Bowl.
Fair enough. Okay, so the big game / Super Bowl will be on Sunday, all things being equal. This past Saturday, we went to Chicago, or at least tried to. I got stuck, so I didn't make the drive, so I watched it on TV with the rest of us. UFC on Fox 10, it was a card of... mostly mediocres.
I thought you were going to say mixed bag, and I was going to try to punch you if you would have even given that a mixed bag.
No, I'm not going to give it a mixed bag. I will tell you that I was super fired up about the Darren Cruikshank fight right at the beginning. I mean, that was a great way to get excited for the fight, guy from Detroit. So obviously I'm excited for that. I'm thinking, oh, cool, another
You're
one.
Talking about, but that was like, it's what,
yes,
6 in the afternoon,
I know,
or something?
No, I know. But I guess I'm just trying to set up what I was feeling. I had that feeling that, all right, cool, that thing that Sean talks about where we get to watch fighting for 12 straight hours, this is a great start, and this is a great thing to tell me what this whole thing is going to be about. And then we get to the main card, and I'm like, oh, really? And then Donald Cerrone tries to save it, and then I'm like, oh,
yeah,
really?
And that was my own fault, too. The only fight on that card that was interesting, I had it spoiled on Facebook because I was trying to not watch the commercials. And by the way, whoever was running our Facebook, right on top of it that night, because I could not avoid it. So, was that you?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, man. No one good fight on the card.
Well,
it was all my fault.
On Fox Sports 1, there was a couple. I think the Eddie Wineland fight over Yves Chabon, that was pretty awesome. And obviously, it won fight of the night and sub of the night. The Caceres-Sergio Pettis fight was awesome.
Now here,
and I want to, just before you jump on me, I mean awesome in a way, fun to watch. Sergio clearly not ready for prime time. Alex Caceres is certainly not a title contender, but it was a fun fight to watch and a really fun finish.
Does anybody else, though, in these cards, and I tend to do this, and I know, Eric, you've got a little one. I've got a little one. I know you've got how many, Joe?
4 of them.
Wow.
I'm collecting kids.
Oh, you've got a bench for a Gus Macker team. What is going on there? You got three starters and an extra.
Team.
Yeah, you're going to have to play zone. So, does anybody else just kind of pay attention to the main card? I tape the other ones, but I lose interest almost every time if the main card is lackluster. Like, I believe you, Eric. I believe those are great fights. I don't even know if they're still on my DVR because I was so done with fighting by the time I was done watching the card live, essentially. I didn't even want to watch the fights earlier. And I'm wondering how many people actually kind of do that, where they remember, oh, yeah, this is on Fox. I set the DVR to Fox, or I'm there live in front of the TV for Fox, and I don't get to see some of the cool stuff, and, like the Alex Caceres fight, or the Eddie Wineland fight, or even the Krunkshaft fight earlier in the night. So I don't know if it's me just being biased toward just the main card, but when that's the card most people are watching and most people are seeing, I don't know if it's a good night for the UFC if you have everything that was good buried on that night.
I don't disagree, and I think we talked about this last week. On paper, this looked like a much different night. You know, Stevens and Elkins, I thought either one of them should have finished the fight. That turned out to be a back-and-forth kind of, depending on what you like in mixed martial arts, kind of a sleeper. Cerrone over Martins, that was a brilliant head kick and something that I think shows A, he may have been telling the truth and got his fire back, Joe, and B, how long he's been in the game, because it was, you know, the Babe Ruths are my favorite. Guys that don't go down to pound him out some more. Like, dude, that guy's done. I'll wait till the ref figures this thing out. I'm not following him down. I'm not going to punch him anymore. Like,
I'm not going to wake him back up either.
No, none of those things. Stipe over Gabe, I mean, yes.
Can we stop going into fights saying somebody's going to get knocked out? Because every time we do, it's terrible, and somebody stops remembering how to breathe halfway through the fight.
What was crazy about that fight is that, by all accounts, Stipe should have finished that. Gabe couldn't have, I mean, he barely
got out
of
the— All he had to do was throw a punch! That would have been over!
He barely got out of the first round, and then by the third round, he's like, I'm going to pass out doing that.
While Erica sucks in a paper bag over there to gain his composure, that was ridiculous. That sucked all the air out of the night, literally, out of Gabe's lungs, and then figuratively with all the fans watching at home. And there's nothing that screams champion. I wish I remember who tweeted this. Like falling on the ground and gasping for breaths of air as if you're dying. Because at the end of that fight, that's what Gabe, it just fell to the, if you're going to do that, just tap out at some point. Because we thought you were going to die in there.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was a terrible fight. And look, you can say what you want to say about Henderson and Josh Thompson, and I thought from a
how much time do I have?
You have as much as you need. I will, before you go, I will say from a grappling aspect, that first round was very fun to watch. It obviously got a little bit more repetitive and seemed like sparring as the further we got through that. It didn't look like, and I go, Josh obviously broke his thumb or part of it. I mean, his thumb for sure, and more. I mean, that cast was pretty big for a thumb break, but
he said he could bend his thumb back to his wrist. At the end of the first round, he could literally bend his thumb all the way back to his wrist. So he had to fight four more rounds like that.
I honestly didn't have a problem with the fight as is in the cage, what was happening, and especially once we got some of the backstory on the fight when the announcers picked up in that second round, I believe it was, about the handbrake, and then they got a little more info and figured out it was the thumb and what was going on there. I didn't mind the fight in and of itself. I thought Josh Thompson showed a lot of heart. I thought that he was a guy that went in there like a warrior and did what he had to do. And I thought he manhandled Benson Henderson for most of the night.
Yes.
I'm a fan of grappling. That first round I thought was amazing, the way he just manhandled Benson Henderson and was able to keep him tied up essentially the entire round. Of course, you know, you go to your CompuBox strike stats and all those things. Yeah, we all know Benson threw more and landed more. But who got controlled in that fight, even by a guy with a broken thumb? It was Benson Henderson. And I think what's frustrating, and I'm 100% honest about this, I will watch them afterwards if I need to. I will tune in where I need to for this show. I have no interest any longer in watching Benson Henderson fight. I really don't. There's nothing interesting about him to me. There's nothing I want to see in these fights. I know I've been soured by the fact that sometimes I think he wins fights he shouldn't. That's not his fault. I'm not even blaming him. So don't say, oh, you're hating on Benson Henderson. Why wouldn't you want to watch? I don't have to watch him. And I really don't want to. And I think the announcers know he's going to get the favorable end on all these whacked out decisions, because the fight they were calling was not the fight that you and I were watching, Eric.
No, it was not. And Joe has pulled all the stats, as he does. He does a great job of this. This is one I knew going into this. Sal D'Amato was the idiot who thought it was 4-1 to Benson Henderson.
And that's the other thing, too. You get these whacked out decisions.
4-1!
And then you get an insane one. And that's when I'm like, okay, at least Josh pulled it out when you heard the score call.
Yeah.
No. Are you kidding me?
4-1. Look, if you want to say that he, you know, either guy won, I'm not going to argue with you either way. If you want to call it a draw, I'm actually on board with that 100%. If you want to give one of these guys 4-1 and his name isn't Josh Thompson, you have no idea what you're watching. I don't care what dumb excuse you're going to make about, well, they don't have the monitors in front of them and they don't have the benefit of replay. They obviously don't have the benefit of connecting synapses either, because 4-1 is clinically insane. And as Joe pointed out, this is the same idiot that gave it to GSP over Hendricks.
And this is an interesting thing. I can't believe I'm the guy trying to make an excuse, but I did notice that there were a lot of people saying that when you see Benson Henderson live, he's one of the guys that you don't understand what he can do until you are live and you are next to him. So I don't know. Maybe he's moving super fast in there. Maybe he lands a strike and it just sounds like he's bringing the thunder of Thor down on somebody. I don't know. But what I saw on TV, what you saw on TV, and what almost everybody on Twitter and Facebook saw on TV was not a decision that should have gone to Benson Henderson. He's not the champion anymore. He doesn't even get that champion's advantage where you've got to go in and beat the champion. You know, Dana White, what did he say? What did you find out that he said, Joe?
He said the decision was way off.
Way off. But I think he nailed it.
To your point, Ken, Henderson doesn't sell pay-per-views. His gates are always low. And even when he was live on Fox, he doesn't put the numbers up.
I don't think people...
So what do you do with the guy?
I don't know what you do. You don't have a main event anymore. There is nothing about a fight of his that I want to see. If he's on before somebody I want to see, I'll watch the fight. Go ahead and put him on. If he's in a main event, I may as well just tune out now, because I'm frustrated at the end of the night. I'm literally frustrated.
You should be, because what this does, Ken, is mire up 155.
That's the other point.
That you can't make sense of it. Dave Doyle wrote this brilliant article on MMA fighting that we have up on our Facebook page. You can check it out. But essentially, he starts out by saying, is it the ghost of Frankie Edgar in the way that Babe Ruth used to haunt Yankee Stadium? Is it the ghost of Frankie Edgar that's now haunting this division? Because first, he points out that Melendez has to job to Henderson, essentially. Then TJ Grant absolutely smashes his way to the number one contendership and then gets concussed doing jiu-jitsu and has not been heard from since.
Yeah.
You know, like, this whole thing is that episode of the Brady Bunch where they go to Hawaii and they get that tiki doll. That's what's going on at 155 pounds right now.
Well, let's remember, too, Josh Thompson, he took this fight. He essentially has a title shot wrapped up, and he took the fight to stay active. He wanted to fight Benson Henderson. He did everything he had to do in there, and all of a sudden we've got Benson Henderson is your number one contender again?
Benson Henderson is your number one contender, and you get Josh Thompson going to walk away from the sport.
And you know what? I really actually respect Josh Thompson's take on this. If you missed it, after the fight, he was talking about it. He said, I don't know. I was thinking about retiring before this anyways. And he said, what's the point of coming back to try to fight for the title, even if I had a title shot at this point? I'm going to retire soon. Why would I leave the UFC in that shape? And I respect what he's saying there. I'd still love to see him fight for a title, even after this fight. I don't want to see Benson Henderson in there. I don't want to see him in there against a guy who's beaten him cleanly twice, either.
Yes, and there's obviously been some buzz out of the 209 as Nate Diaz trying to talk himself into that title shot. Looks more and more, as Joe pointed out before we went on the air, that from a monetary standpoint, I'm sure, Ken, you would back this up, this is the fight that makes the most sense. You know,
Nate Diaz?
Yeah, Nate Diaz and Pettis?
Yeah. Anybody? Diaz, Sonnen, Lesnar. I'll always vote for those fights.
But in all seriousness, you know, he was on Twitter trying to talk himself into the fight, which I'm all about you doing that, because the result of this fight leaves us with, you know, something that we don't want, which is the third fight of Henderson Pettis, which Dana White said he's not going to do. Fine. But how? I mean,
he did say he's not going to do it.
He said it after the press conference.
Because I heard they're kind of stuck right now. I mean, what else are they going to do?
You can't do this. You just can't. I don't care what his record is.
You and your friend say he's number one.
I don't know. I don't care what his record is. You can't do this.
So Gilbert Melendez is number two.
Yes.
I think he deserves the next shot.
I wouldn't be mad at that either.
I think Diaz will get it for, like what you said, nobody else in the lightweight division sells except for Diaz. And at the end of the day, they're in the entertainment business.
But how do you put Melendez in there if you've got a guy in Benson Henderson coming off a win who's beat him? I'm not saying you can agree or disagree with that, but it's the fact, right?
I think wasn't it Chael Sonnen on Saturday that said it's about entertainment, it's not about pride. And he's talking to Vanderlei. If this was about pride, I would have beat your ass in the street and thrown you in a van and driven you off of a bridge if it was about pride. But it's not. It's about entertainment. This is what we're trying to do.
Absolutely.
And so from an entertainment standpoint, you're right, Ken. If he doesn't sell pay-per-views, as Joe just said, if his gates are low, then from a business perspective, you can't, to use a wrestling word, you can't book that thing because you need to have people pay attention to this weight class. You can't just have one weight class in the UFC that's literally this weird amalgamation of a guy who only wins decisions and three of those eight wins in the UFC are split decisions. He's not even close to the same dynamic fighter he was in WEC, and you can say, well, it's because the ring is bigger and that whatever 1 foot or 6 inches or whatever it is gives you so much more space that you make everybody fall asleep by lying in a body triangle for 5 minutes, taking out Sal D'Amato for dinner, and then winning 4-1 decisions.
Allegedly. That's an alleged fact. That's not.
I don't know the facts could be alleged, but
that's an alleged fact.
I appreciate the backup on that one.
Whatever.
Will they do Henderson Pettis? I hope not. I mean, Pettis, there was that weird thing over the weekend where Pettis is interviewing Henderson, saying that when he comes back, he wants to come back 4th of July weekend and fight Henderson, which I don't understand that either.
Well, if you're Anthony Pettis, yeah, you want to fight him for the rest of your career.
No, you don't.
Eat the belt.
It's right. An easy W, yeah.
Right. Yeah, take him however you want. That's what Benson Henderson always says. Pettis, I got the W.
Pettis is in Milwaukee going, what are the ways I haven't beat him yet? I'm going to do those.
That would be very
interesting. Broke his arm.
Let's do this. Anthony Pettis is not allowed to beat him in any way that he's already beat him. So every time
can't be a decision.
He fights him.
Can't be an armbar. Okay,
has to
where
be
do we
different.
Go? Okay, I can do Darce
so
choke.
You can do a head kick.
I can knock him out.
I mean, there's still a lot
showtime
going on.
Showtime kick.
Yep, showtime kick. I could actually finish it with that. Flying triangle. That could happen. So yeah, all those things are up in the air.
Powerbomb is still on the
power
table.
Powerbomb is still on
the
table.
It's always on the table.
Although Josh Thompson tried to do that on Saturday night. That was pretty close as I've seen in a while to a non-Nurmagomedov sort of pile driver. So we're stuck at 155.
Wait, what? Nurmagomedov's at 155, right?
Right. Yeah,
why aren't they letting this guy tear through the division?
Well, because nobody wants to fight him. So because he's exciting, so he has to sit on the side. Because if you don't think, I will give you, I mean, maybe most fans won't, but I'll give you $60 right now for Nate Diaz Nurmagomedov. I'll give it to you right now.
And Nurmagomedov is one of those guys people will start paying for. And
I'm going to start that trend. I'm paying for it right now.
He's the anti-Benson Henderson right now. You want to see this, dude. You see, that's when I will have to watch a Benson Henderson fight if he's on the same card as Nurmagomedov, and you trick me into watching Benson Henderson fight.
If I trick you.
Like, oh, what's this guy doing here laying on the ground? Oh, it's Benson Henderson.
It's Benson Henderson.
All right, boy.
When we come back, UFC 169, it is the Super Card on Super Bowl weekend. We'll talk about it. We are Way of the Warrior, brought to you by Gun Lake Casinos. Always available on Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. Stop.
Way of the Warrior. Follow our Twitter account at WOW Show.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric, along with Ken and Joe, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, available on Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. Part of the Fight Fans Radio Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. So there's really no reason not to take us with you wherever you would like to take you. Take us. Take whatever you're going to do. There you go.
There's a reason not to take anybody anywhere.
Because I won't let you talk.
If you won't turn my microphone on. Sean's not here because he's in Jersey. Do you think he's listening right now?
I hope so. I hope he is listening, as UFC 169 is this weekend. The debut of the Motown Phenom, Kevin Lee, taking on Al Iaquinta, 7-2-1. Kevin Lee is undefeated. That will kick off the card on Fox Sports 1.
Ooh.
And then the main card, it's a big one. You got Barao and Faber, Aldo and Lamas, Mir and Overeem, Lanker and Bagatinov, and then Varner and Trio, which, again, on paper, anytime Varner's involved, Joe, I think you can bet on it being an exciting fight. There are a couple issues as we make our way through this card, though. You've got Lanker, who we've talked about. He has not made weight in three of the last five fights. So
Let's keep booking him.
Yeah, how can you book a guy like that?
And a guy who knocks people out at this division, a guy that they want at this division.
Well, yeah, because he's heavier than everybody.
Because he comes in at 205. how do you keep booking the guy? And if you're going to book the guy, why don't you make him go up?
Because he keeps knocking people out. We talked about it last segment. It's all about entertainment at this point. And if he's going to keep coming in and entertaining and just giving up 10% of his purse to the other dude, what are you going to do?
It's not fair to the other guy.
Dana White said it's fair.
The UFC's got money. Get him Mike Dolce. Get him down to the right
Benson
weight.
Benson Henderson is the number one contender. Life is not fair if we haven't learned that already.
Life is totally not fair. And I think it's interesting that he just doesn't seem to care about giving away that 20% of his purse. He's like, nah, whatever. I really, really love Big Macs.
So is that worth it, though? Maybe that's worth it. You keep coming in bigger. You're not as tired as the other guy. You're not drained.
The problem with that is you're going to knock everybody out in that division except for the champ, and they're never going to let you touch him because they're scared that you won't make weight.
Yeah, and then you're going to ruin a card. Yeah, I get that. It's just, what are you going to do?
You're going to hope that Ali Bagatinov takes him out, and then we won't have to worry about it. Frank Mir and Overeem, this is as close as one can get in the first pay-per-view of 2014 as a loser-leaves-town match. I can't imagine either one of them gets to stick around, especially Overeem, if he loses this fight.
I don't think Frank Mir is going anywhere.
But you can't possibly look me in the eye as you are right now and tell me that Overeem's going to stay if he loses to Frank Mir.
No, Overeem's not going to stay. It would be a tough road for Frank simply because he would then have a loss to Overeem. And that's not a good thing now. But I don't think Frank Mir is going anywhere. He's going to be one of those guys around the UFC for a long time. They're going to find some job.
Do they need him? I mean, okay,
they don't
yeah.
need him. But,
you're saying he'll be in the organization, not fighting, right? We're getting close to that.
Frank Mir is one of those dudes that you can put him in with these guys when you want to kind of flush out the division a little bit. You've got a former champion who shows up well. That's why he keeps getting these fights against guys like Roy Nelson or guys like Alistair Overeem.
He's 0-3 though. So if he goes 0-4. Dana White might take the Chuck Liddell stance and say, hey, we care about
this
guy.
Yeah, but he's never got popped the way Chuck Liddell has. I mean, he got his strawberry face from Brock Lesnar, but that's about it as far as real tough damage he's taken. So,
I don't know about you, bro, and I know Sean's not here to yell about us about talking about him. I wouldn't stand in a line at a museum or an amusement park to get punched in the face by Brock Lesnar one time.
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, that's a while ago. That's what I'm saying. He's fought a lot since then.
I bet it sticks with you.
Yeah, oh no, lunchbox hands.
I'm just saying, when you get clobbered over the
head
with
a ham. Randy Couture says he's got knocked woozy by you. You know you got knocked woozy, and you don't want to get hit by that dude.
Joe, what do you think we're going to expect out of this fight? Is Overeem going to be a guy like? Do you think we're getting anywhere near? He changed camps. He went over to Thailand to do some kickboxing, and like, I think everybody would really enjoy the Alistair Overeem who essentially retired Brock Lesnar. That would be a performance they would like to see. But what's the likelihood of us seeing that?
Unlikely. You know, he's gotten knocked out or he's lost on his feet his last few fights. So why did he go to Thailand to work on his Muay Thai? And Frank Mir is dangerous on the ground. He's, you know, probably the most dangerous heavyweight on the ground. So I see Frank going for the takedown and trying to submit him. And actually, that's my upset pick will be Frank over Alistair.
Is Alistair the favorite in this one?
I thought so, yeah.
You can't just make it an upset pick.
Sure you can.
Jeez.
Yeah, Overeem is -300. Frank Mir is +200.
Wow, we need to find a bookie locally.
Right? No kidding. I'll take that money.
Because, I mean, if you're really going to look at these two and you're gonna take away striking and grappling, what do you always do with heavyweights? You look at their gas tanks. Frank Mir's got a gas tank. That's one thing we know about Frank Mir. Alistair Overeem... he hasn't had a gas tank since he was fighting in Pride, and nobody's disagreeing.
Yeah. If he goes into really the second round, there. This is Frank's fight to lose. For
goes
sure.
1:30 into the right. first.
If it gets past minute two, I think it goes in his favor. And then you've got two, I think, very interesting matches in Aldo with Lamas. Lamas looked like a real contender. He fought literally a year ago in January in Chicago was the last time you saw him fight. And now he gets into a title match with Jose Aldo, which I don't know about you guys, but when it comes to Barão and Aldo, it's hard for me to talk myself out of them winning because I just don't know that Lamas has got anything that Aldo has not seen before.
Well, Jose Aldo is my upset pick for this card.
I don't think it's
upset.
Is he
the favorite?
I agree with you on this one, Eric. It's hard to pick against either of those guys right now. Ricardo Lamas, been a lot of fun to watch. I know you're a big proponent of the guy. But, yeah, what does he do in this fight against Jose Aldo?
He's got to take him deep. Aldo has gassed in the last in 4 and 5 in championship bouts, and he pretty much coasted to the win in a lot of them. So if he can take him past 3, get into 4 and 5,
yeah, but
he's
Ricardo
got a
Lamas
chance.
Hasn't had to do that. So that's a tough bill.
Yeah,
that's a tough bill to set up for
it's,
a dude.
Well, it's a tough bill, and then when you look at a guy like Mark Hominick, who was able to do that, even Hominick couldn't, who's got a gas tank and took a beating and still hung in there, still couldn't.
And how do you tell a guy, why don't you hang with Jose Aldo for 2 or 3 rounds and then turn it on?
I got a great idea. Just stay in there with 20 minutes and you're good.
Yeah. Dude, just pace yourself.
Right.
Stay. Do not let him kick
and
you.
And that's another problem, too, is a guy like Ricardo Lamas. I mean, he can be very explosive. He can be very dynamic. It's a 5-round fight. Sometimes you have to kind of pace yourself. You don't want necessarily in that first round to go in and then use up all your energy and have that adrenaline dump and then be gassed for the rest of the fight. But that's part of your game plan, is to be able to be explosive and to be able to be dynamic.
But the problem becomes, guys, is if Aldo's able to set distance and if he gets those leg kicks going early, he's going to keep him at bay. Mm-hmm. And so Lamas is going to have to keep coming forward and keep pushing and pushing and taking that damage on the way in, while Aldo can, to both of your points, chill out a little bit in those first couple rounds and wait for him to be totally worn down and lose his lead leg and go for the finish if that's what he wants to do.
And as much heat as I take on the show for hating guys who like have a strategy and want to go in and kind of just win the fight in whatever way they can, this is the difference between a guy like Jose Aldo and a guy like Benson Henderson. I don't mind watching him just find that range and just pop a guy for an entire fight. I don't mind him landing those kicks. I don't mind him stuffing the occasional takedown and then just keeping the things on the feet. Maybe not necessarily going for the knockout, but he's trying to do damage at least the entire fight.
I would disagree with you. I think Aldo's always trying to go for the finish. You saw it in the Mendez fight. I mean, he was really patient. He stuffed the takedowns. He turned on his own level of wrestling and ended up winning that fight and had that awesome celebration with the crowd. So he's a guy who, unlike Benson, who Dana White himself called a grinder, Aldo is being patient in the same way that George is patient, but he's also looking for the kill shot. Like, he's going to set that leg up so that you are so damaged and can't walk at all, and then he's going to leap on you.
And maybe that's why I enjoy what he does more if it lasts for 5 rounds. I don't necessarily blame him the way and blame is perhaps a wrong word, but I do. I blame Benson Henderson for those boring fights sometimes. I'm not going to have that problem usually with a Jose Aldo fight, because by the end of it, I know he was patient, he was looking for opportunities, and he probably cut the guy down. And that dude knows for a long, long time that he was in a fight.
Yep.
So even if it does go 5 rounds and you can last that long with that guy, I don't think at any point was the guy coasting. Even when we talked about those other fights, even in those rounds, like you said, he's still looking for his spot. Maybe he's a little gassed. Maybe he laid a lot on in those first 3, but he's still looking for his spots, and I would much rather see a fighter do that anytime than implement a game plan where they're not really doing anything, but they look like they're winning, which I would say is Benson Henderson.
Well, and Joe, I would say in that Hominick fight, I think Aldo just ran out of ways to finish him. Like, I don't have any other. I mean, I don't know what it takes.
He threw everything at him.
Like, this is what I've got.
You can't stop those leg kicks. He doesn't turn his whole body into him, but he's got the power behind him. He's just lightning quick and snaps him at him. What can you do to those leg to defend those leg kicks? You can't eat them all night long.
Knee check.
Do the knee check.
Knee
good,
check.
Good luck with that.
Train with Chris Weidman.
Yes, exactly. And then to me, and I'm sure most people, and obviously this is the point of a good card, the most interesting, most debatable fight on the card has to be Barão and Faber. I mean, Faber has literally beat everybody in the UFC. 24 people in the UFC that didn't have titles, he has beaten them all in his entire career, and 16 wins in the UFC, all of them finishes as long as there wasn't a title involved. So this, while you go, oh, here we go again, it's Uriah Faber in a title match, I get it, but they don't have anything left for this guy. He finishes everybody. He is on a tear right now, and a very scary-looking guy going against Hendon Barão, who, again, I find it very hard to bet against Hendon Barão. I'm super excited. Nothing against Dominic Cruz, friend of the show, but I'm super excited that debate is over. Barão is the champion, so whoever wins this fight is the champion. We don't have to have this debate, you know, Uriah Faber beat the interim champion, so he's the interim. This is it. This is the belt. And, again, a very interesting match, but Faber a favorite for a lot of fans, but I don't know, man. Barão is Barão, and he's a serial killer.
Ken, I'll take one more underdog. I'm going to take Faber over Barão.
I'm going to take Barão as my underdog then. And as we change the meaning of the word. Yeah, this is an interesting fight. And like you said, Eric, maybe the most debatable, but I don't think any of us think that Barral's not going to win this fight.
Well,
I literally give this one to Faber. I think the timing's right. I think the stars are lining up.
I don't disagree with that.
I give it to him. He's on a tear.
You think he's going to win, though. You don't just think the opportunity's ripe for him.
I do. In 2013, he finished four guys. This is going to be his fifth fight in a year. I think he's hot, and this is his time to take it.
Oh, he is red hot right now, which is what makes this so interesting. But when you look at, and we've talked about this on the show a lot, when you look at Barral's career, he lost his first pro fight and went, oh, I get it. I know how the sport works, and hasn't lost since. So when you look at fight IQ, and while it's hard via translation in Portuguese to certainly understand a lot of what Barral says, either after the fight, before the fight, in the, you know, the countdowns, all of that stuff, you can't deny the guy's fight IQ if he hasn't lost since his first fight. He clearly understands how to read dudes and adapt and get through these fights. And so, having already seen Faber, Faber's obviously in the enviable position in that he's red hot. He's seen a lot of really great prospects and vanquished them all. So he's probably got some skill sets that are really razor sharp that Barral might not be ready for, and that might be where that opportunity shows up.
He does have a guru in his corner, too, being Dwayne Bang Ludwig. They're going to go in there with the perfect game plan, and if he can execute, it's going to be a great fight either way.
Well, the problem, too, that Uriah Faber always has, and he's certainly going to have it now, is he's such an accomplished fighter. He's such a good fighter. Every time he goes in, he's always ready to fight. Nobody ever, ever, ever is going to overlook Uriah Faber. This is not going to be a situation.
No.
This is never going to be an Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman situation. This is never going to be a GSP almost being beat by Carlos Condit situation. And I'm not saying those guys necessarily overlook those dudes, but Chris Weidman, you're not giving him a lot of credit in that first fight against Silva. Condit, he's just another guy that's going to walk into the GSP buzzsaw. That's what you usually see with guys of that caliber, guys of the caliber of Hendon Brow. If they're going to get beat, it's probably going to be a guy who's in that number one spot by default, and he's fighting you because he's in that spot, but maybe nobody thinks he's going to win. I don't think ever in his career Uriah Faber has been able to walk into a fight as that kind of guy. Guys are always ready for Uriah Faber. They're always going to be on their game plan, and they're always going to be sharp for Uriah Faber because they know that he's one of the top fighters in the game.
Well, and I would say, Ken, to that point, and Joe, to your pick, you know that while this may never be said in public, it's probably being said in the camp, Barral doesn't want to fight Faber a third time. Like, I think he just wants to beat him twice and move on to whoever the next. He doesn't want to beat Faber, or I'm sorry, have Faber beat him and have to go through this,
match, right?
You know, do a rubber match.
Well, he certainly does. I mean, he's the champ. He doesn't want to lose the belt and all
obviously,
of those things.
But I just mean, like, losing it to a guy like Faber, because Faber's going to defend the belt five times this year if he got it, you know, and that's
right.
When guys are that razor sharp, it makes him very hard to beat. When George is a hard guy to beat, it's when he's the busiest, when he's been in and out of camps and training and doing new stuff. It's when they have these long layoffs that you get that Carlos Condit factor, where you come back from knee surgery and you've been gone a long time, and Condit has been in the gym grinding forever and growing a crazy beard and massaging his Falcon and getting ready to, you know, do this thing. That's when you can capitalize on that. I'm the number one guy by default, and then I almost win the belt.
You got that Clubber Lang factor there.
Exactly.
Nobody saw Clubber coming.
Nobody saw him coming.
Rock, you got to get out of there and train for real.
UFC 169 is going to be on pay-per-view. As I said, the prelims, they kick off on Fox Sports 1, and that will be Ally Quinta taking on our local and show favorite, Kevin Lee.
Now, that's at 7 o'clock then, right? That those start when the pay-per-views are on?
Yep.
See, I don't mind those. It's the crazy Fox cards that have to start
at 8. Yeah, because they've got to start at 8, so you start watching
fights
at 3
about
in the
that.
Afternoon.
Yeah, in the first segment, where I didn't catch any of the great, what I've heard, undercard from this past weekend, but this weekend I'll probably be able to catch much of that because it's on a little later.
That's actually 8 p.m. Eastern, Fox Sports 1 prelim start.
Well, I would have tuned in an hour earlier, so Fox Sports 1 is not going to be happy with you.
You would have watched an episode of, I don't know, How I Met Your Mother?
It's usually Chael Sonnen yelling out for an hour, and I love that.
You could have gone on Fight Pass. Those prelims start at 6:30.
Yeah, I'm not going on there. You're going to need to fix that.
And we'll do news here in a second, but I do want to ask you one question since Sean isn't here, Ken. I do want to ask you about Royal Rumble. Did you watch any of the Royal Rumble?
I didn't get a chance. I was watching a lot of the Grammys.
What is your sense of what they, I mean, essentially, if you're not a wrestling fan, they do this thing where 30 guys go in, one guy comes out. They brought back Dave Bautista, who tried to make a go at MMA, had no gas tank, and by all accounts, what I read, couldn't really even do a finish in a pre predetermined ending to a throwing a guy over a rope match.
There's a problem, too, when they leave one of the most popular guys out, and it's interesting, and this comes back a little bit to the UFC's business. Daniel Bryan is one of those guys who's super popular, very much over right now. They didn't even put him in the match, so by the time the night was over, the crowd was booing, obviously. Batista, he's about as popular in wrestling as he was in MMA when he was fighting, which is not very much. So basically, you have what you had in Chicago last week, where by the end of the night, crowd's just angry. And they're directing it towards you, and that's an interesting lesson to learn. Now, UFC can't do anything about it. WWE can.
But you guys just said Fight Pass, and it reminded me, you know, one of the tweets I saw when I was watching the Grammys was somebody saying, thank God for the WWE Universe or Network thing, so I never have to pay for this sort of garbage again, you know, which is obviously not a great business model for you to launch.
Maybe that's
this thing.
A selling point.
Yes, clearly. All right, we'll be back. You can follow us along on Twitter and Facebook as we do all of the results coming up from UFC 169. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.